This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
From time immemorial, beginning with indigenous councils and ancient wisdom traditions, through the work of Western visionaries such as Plato, Galileo, and quantum physicist David Bohm, mutually participatory dialogue has been seen as the key to evolving and transforming consciousness, evoking a flow of meaning, a Daya flow of logos, meaning, beyond what any one individual can bring through alone. So join us now, as together with you, the active deep listener, we evoke and engage in living dialogues. Welcome once again to Living Dialogues. I'm your host, Duncan Campbell, and with me I'm delighted to have Joseph Chilton Pierce, author of Crack in the Cosmic Egg, the national bestseller The Magical Child, and Evolution's End, and most recently, The Biology of Transcendence, which will take his very innovative and paradigm-shattering insights into yet another level. I would say, Joe, in this particular dialogue, what would be very interesting would be to follow on your previous descriptions of the evolution of our brain from the reptilian through the mammalian, through the neocortex, and finally to the prefrontal lobe aspects over the course of human evolution, and bring us up to date with the latest in what is now called neurocardiology, which shows why, as a species, we're poised now to finally escape the trap of a culture that has led to cycles of violence throughout history.
Neurocardiology, to me, is one of the most exciting single fields that have opened up in the 20th century. Rudolf Steiner, the founder of Waldorf education and a great German scientist, he had a PhD in sciences from a German university, who was also kind of a seer and a prophet. He had insight, he had intuition. And Steiner said back 100 years ago that the greatest discovery of 20th century science, of late 20th century science, would be that the heart is not a pump, but profoundly more than that. And that the greatest challenge 21st century humans would have would be to allow the heart to teach us to think in a new way. And that's precisely the position we're in right now. It's why I'm such a passionate promoter of Waldorf education and of the Institute of Heart Math, for instance, the work they're doing in Boulder Creek, California, a fantastic group of people quietly working for 35 years now on the relationship between the brain and the heart. Neurocardiology, from about 1996, when the first major textbook was produced by Oxford University Press, neurocardiology is a study of the brain in the heart. It's the discovery that about 60 to 65% of all the cells of the heart are neural cells functioning exactly as the cells in our brain do. There is no difference between them. They function in neural ganglia through the same neurotransmitters, the same dendrites and axons, the same glial cells, pumping the calcium ions into them and so on that you find going on in the brain. The heart is a very large organ, and the brain in the heart is a very large part of the heart itself. Now, what's the significance of that is the discovery by John and Beatrice Lacy 30-some years ago under a grant from the National Institutes of Health, and they did 30 years of research on this, is that there's a direct unmediated neural connection between the brain in the heart and the brain in our head. Now, which brain in our head is critically important? The heart is connected by unmediated neural connections, long axons, running directly from the heart to the limbic structure, the emotional cognitive brain in our head, the old mammalian brain, the brain of love, nurturing, memory, immune systems, and so on. Not the neocortex, the brain of thinking, creativity, and intellect, but the ancient mammalian brain of nurturing, love, care, of your species, and so on. Now, the Lacys discovered that there was an ongoing 24-hour-a-day dialogue between the heart and the brain. The brain and the heart and the brain and the head. And what is this dialogue? It has to do with the well-being of the whole living organism. Our well-being. The heart has an intelligence, a profound and far older intelligence than we have in our brain. The heart's intelligence is devoted to one thing, our well-being, both as an individual and as a species. And it moves at all times for well-being of the individual and the individual species. Now, this in itself is a tremendous discovery to make. They ignored the academic world. The scientific world completely ignored the Lacys when they made this discovery. And it's been called some of the most beautiful neurological work ever done in neuroscience, and yet totally ignored. Why? Because it proposes that the heart is a source of major intelligence in the human being, something our great saints and poets have always said down throughout history, something that all of us know intuitively within us. And if we haven't felt those great intuitive surges from the heart, we're just half dead. Now, to bring this into the academic world is proving to be very difficult. Why? Because the academic world, so far, scientific academic world, is based primarily on 19th century Cartesian, kind of Newtonian physics ideas. That's only part of the discovery about neurocardiology. The other is that the heart is a major endocrine gland of the whole system. It produces hormones which profoundly affect the operations of the brain and every organ of the body, and is, in the last analysis, the major orchestrator of all of the hormonal systems of the body. It does this through the brain and directly with the body itself. Mm-hmm. But the most exciting single part of the heart is the third factor. The heart produces an enormously powerful electromagnetic field which travels out from the heart in the form of a torus, and that's a particular mathematical physical form. It's kind of a donut-shaped force with a dipole or an axis, which is virtually identical to the electromagnetic field produced by the Earth and by the Sun itself. The heart produces exactly that same type of electromagnetic field, which goes out from the heart and out to a distance of some 12 to 15 feet away, at which point we know it continues, but we don't have the instrumentation to detect it at that point. So you have the heart as an enormous electromagnetic generator. Mm-hmm. And what is this electromagnetic spectrum? Primarily radio waves. And this is what you see spelling out on your electrocardiogram, mm-hmm, in these waves, and you see the amplitude and so on. The heart functions at an amplitude of 40 to 60 times greater than the entire output of the brain in our head, mm-hmm, and produces this field. Now, this electromagnetic field that the heart produces contains within it virtually everything that there is. It contains within it all of the frequencies on which our brain draws, mm-hmm, to create the world experience we have. When Carl Prebram, our great neuroscientist, said 30 years ago that the brain functions by drawing on frequency fields which are not located within time-space, he was exactly right. Those frequency fields are located all around us in the frequency produced by the heart itself. These are holographic. The frequencies produced by the heart function the same at any locality. Any tiniest part of it contains the information of the whole. But so do the frequencies that surround the electromagnetic frequencies that surround the Earth and the solar system.
So we're embedded in a series of resonant fields.
A hierarchy, mm-hmm, of resonant electromagnetic fields, mm-hmm, in which all the information of the universe is there.
Not unlike the work of Rupert Sheldrake.
Sheldrake fits it beautifully. Sheldrake saw all this very clearly. Mm-hmm. That's why he's been so frustrated, because he has seen such a great picture of how things are. And, of course, the academic world, as you know, operates about a century behind.
About a century behind.
Now, this field of neurocardiology, though, is pointing up the profound importance of the connection between the heart and the emotional structures of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the newest research into the brain shows the profound importance of connecting the emotional or limbic brain with its connection to the heart with the prefrontal lobes.
Mm-hmm.
And those connections are established in the first immediate months after birth and in that critical 9 to 12 month period, and then the toddler period from about 11 to 18 months of age.
Mm-hmm.
And it's during this period that either we make the connections between the highest brain created by evolution to transcend all of the limitations of the other brain structures and rise and go beyond them. That brain's critical connections with the emotional brain and its critical connections with the heart, which is the final link up in this huge evolutionary process that involves the whole universe. And it's that part of the what they call the orbitofrontal loop of the prefrontal lobes and connection with the emotional brain, which we find is literally sidetracked by the enculturation, by the cultural effect, profoundly changing the biology of the brain and locking us into our defensive mode, into the limitations of an instinctual, reflexive, non-intellectual system as our primary base of operations, which is culture, and the shutting down of the biology of transcendence itself. So there is a quick thumbnail sketch of what's involved in the new discoveries about the heart, and I think Rudolf Steiner has now been vindicated, and when he says the greatest challenge of humans from now on will be to allow the heart to teach us to think in a new way. And therein lies our survival as a species or not. If we can manage that, if we can break the cultural stranglehold and allow the heart to teach us to think in a new way, we'll move beyond the limitations and constraints that confront us right now, which are literally leading us to not only self-destruction, but destruction of our planet itself.
Exactly. And thank you so much, Joe, for that particular thumbnail sketch, which was very elegant. And what it suggests to me now as a topic for our dialogue is the observation made by a number of visionaries that we are poised at a time in human history to go beyond our polarized black and white either or kind of thinking that has brought so many inventions, brought about the scientific revolution, so-called, the Copernican revolution, the Industrial Revolution, the Information Revolution, the Technological Revolution. That ability of the neocortex to actually deconstruct reality into component parts and reconstruct the fragments in a new and imaginative understanding that gives birth to these kinds of inventions. And you're suggesting here a wisdom of the heart, which has been called that by many writers and poets, that somehow transcends and includes, that does not get caught into this either-or way of thinking. It's more like what dream researchers have called the message of the big dream, which is a both-and message, that there's some part of our psyche which insists on not getting caught in that either-or polarity, as creative as it might be in the short run, but wants to take us to a wider inclusive wisdom. And here, I want to ask you once again, with this confirmation, very exciting new discoveries in Western science of confirming of the perennial wisdom from the mystical traditions around the world, what do we do with this new information? We talked in a prior dialogue of how the seduction to try to restructure culture or reform the establishment of belief systems, whether they be spiritual or educational or religious, is a losing enterprise that only gives more energy to what you called culture. So with these new insights and confirmations, Joe, what would be your recommended plan of action for an adult individual who is childless and for parents who have children?
Well, the first thing is to realize that the heart has no neural capacity for judging the kind of signal sent it. This was the interesting thing that the Laces discovered, that the heart, that the limbic structure, the emotional brain, is sending the heart the signal, instant by instant, completely below our awareness, of what our response to our living situation is. If our response to our living situation is one of joy, peace, love, happiness, etc., the limbic system simply sends a positive signal to the brain. It has no content. I mean, to the brain and the heart. The heart has no way to distinguish the validity or invalidity of the signal being sent. It simply is sent a signal saying, hey, things are pretty good here. And it responds on a profoundly different level and way than it does if it gets the signal that things are lousy here. Now, we find that corresponding with that, if the heart gets the signal that things are very bad, it puts into motion a whole system of shifting in the brain structure so that we shift out of the higher levels of the brain, which lead us to transcendence and emancipation, we might say, back to where? The ancient survival modes of brain. You can see it on your brain scans. There's a shift from the prefrontals and the higher parts of the brain back to where? The ancient archetypal defense mechanism in the reptilian structures of the brain, our instinctual, reflexive, survival brain. At the very time when we need higher intelligence more than any other, we have shut it off on behalf of survival. So that's, in effect, the cultural dilemma that we're in. Now, what culture screams at us is we must take care of our survival mechanism. We must defend ourselves. The Institute of Heart Math has rigged up simply a very simple process by which we can literally turn the tables on this instinctual reflex in us to defend ourselves, which then robs us of our higher intelligence. The intelligence of the heart sends the heart into its negative mode to try to help us in our defense mechanism, because the heart, again, can't distinguish the nature or character of the signal sent by the higher brain. In other words, it can't judge the reports we give it. Now, the trick of the whole thing is, can we as an individual drop our defense mechanism, instant by instant, when every instinct and signal within us is hollering to defend ourselves? Can we do the exact opposite? The instinct for survival is our most ancient and powerful intelligence in us, coming from that old reptilian brain. But it's not the latest evolutionary intelligence, which comes from the heart, prefrontal, emotional brain link. Now, even though enculturation, as Alan Shore's work, I would say even Antonio Damasio clearly spells it out, and Elkanon, Goldberg, and all sorts of others, how the cultural process, if you look closely, how the cultural process damages and impairs the growth of the orbital frontal loop that connects the newest evolutionary brain and the emotional brain with its heart connections. Okay, now, so we're dealing with a damaged system. Even the those of us who are aware of the issue, we're still dealing with a system which has been damaged by culture, which makes us all the more susceptible to the flight-fight mechanism to try to defend ourselves at all cost. But it's that attempt to defend ourselves that we have to drop. How can we do that? Only through trust. And there we're in trouble. Only through what you could call a faith in the life process itself. Or, to be real corny about it, a faith in the intelligence of the heart. But that is something that's available to every single human being. And it's available in this instant moment right now. That wise guy a couple of millennia ago didn't talk about spiritual paths at all. He didn't talk about eightfold paths and all these steps. He said, today is the day, this is the hour, this is the moment. It's either now or never. And what do you do in that moment? You drop your defenses and open up in faith and trust in the life process itself. What is the life process? It's that force that through the green fuse drives the flower, drives my green age, the spirit of the human being, the true transcendent human spirit. Do we trust it? No. We've been enculturated never to trust that, but to trust only our defense mechanisms of prediction and control that come out of that ancient reptilian brain structure. So what we're talking about is a radical shift of attention here, and that's what the Jesus way is all about. It's what the Tao was all about. It's what Krishna is all about in the Bhagavad Gita. Drop your defense mechanisms. See? What are you doing then? Well, it's like almost like a form of suicide. Castaneda spoke of this jumping off the cliff without a parachute. Castaneda understood this. You might not like his way of presenting it. We might question his literary mode of presentation, but he understood this very well, that our enemy is our survival mechanism. And the only escape we have is to accept our death. In effect, that acceptance of one's death is what is meant by picking up the cross. It doesn't have anything in the world to do with religions and all that nonsense. It has to do with individually, personally, within you, accepting your death completely without any intellectual facade in order to do what? Escape your embeddedment in that ancient survival brain. Then you find yourself in a world where everything simply looks differently.
To accept your mortality, the fact that you will one day die.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying accept your death in this moment.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean by that, Joe?
Well, let's say, for instance, and the Institute of Heart Math really taught me this as much as anything else. They're in Boulder Creek, California, and a brilliant bunch of research people. Carl Prebram is one of their research people, a whole raft of people working with them. Let's say, for instance, some drunk comes at you with his clenched fist and fire in his eyes, or even a gun in his hand. What is your first automatic, instinctual reflex?
Fight or flight.
It has to be. Mm-hmm. Now, the instant you go with that, it means that the highest neocortical structures of your brain and your prefrontals and so on buy into that signal from the old reptilian brain, mm-hmm. and you have a shift of attention energy from the highest evolutionary structures back to the ancient ones. So that the ancient reptilian brain has incorporated the higher brain into its service. Mm-hmm. We're not aware of it. It's the most natural thing in the world. I'm just taking care of myself. Do you think I'm a fool? Mm-hmm. But we have bought into the ancient reptilian survival drive at that point. What the taking up of your cross at that point is, you trust the life process to move for the well-being of the situation, not your own situation, the situation that is forming around you at that moment. You do what? You drop your defense mechanism. You turn to your heart. You focus on it, and you send it a message of something joyful and happy. The exact opposite of what the signal from your sensory system is. Your higher creative intelligence and imagination is sending exactly the opposite. Here's Mad Dog rushing at you with its jaws barred. Mm-hmm. I've turned my heart and sent it a signal of something very beautiful, something of love and joy. What have I done? I've established a bridge between the heart and the highest structures of the brain, bypass the ancient instinctual brain, and something different happens. This is how...
Now, what do you mean something different happens?
You never know. There is no prediction and control. There's never any way of knowing what is going to happen next, except that for your own well-being, the heart moves. Moves for the well-being of the whole situation. This is that unconflicted behavior that gives you the capacity to walk across a bed of coals of fire that will melt aluminum on contact. Why? All of your system is crying out that your survival is at stake. Instead, something else happens, and the sensory motor system reads everything on a different level.
And what is the mechanism, Joe, for making this transformation inside yourself? Because it would seem in the example you gave that, you know, 99.9% of people out of 100, when faced with this phenomenon in your example of the mad dog coming toward you with the teeth bared, or someone coming with a knife or a gun and threatening you physical harm, is going to revert instantaneously into that old reptilian brain. And yet there are very, very occasional examples, at least stories are told, of so-called spiritually advanced people just looking upon this with equanimity, as if they were simply a witness.
Indeed, the Institute of Heart Math says you start on very, very small, picayune little things, like an argument with the spouse over a cup of coffee in the morning. You never start with the big ones because you don't have the mental muscularity for it. Mm-hmm. We used to say the same thing in Siddha Yoga meditation. I spent 12 years in an Indian ashram over there, all my winters there. Mm-hmm. And this is what is meant in the taking up your cross. You start with small things. You're faithful in small things, and the bigger ones can be added, bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So what do? You first of all must discover that human nature is fundamentally good, and that the power of the heart can override anything. And to discover that in one instance gives you faith to try it again in another time, and another time, and another time, until finally you begin to realize you're dealing with an incredible power, far greater than the one that you were afraid of in the first place. But you can only discover that in kind of small ways. You can't, sometimes it can happen all at once, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But by and large, it's a trust discovery, trusting the heart. It sounds very corny. In fact, everything in culture will make it sound corny, because it's the one thing that will remove culture from your scene. You're no longer subject to any of the forces of culture once you discover that power of the heart. Now, that's what you can do for yourself. And there's an old statement made a couple of millennia ago: if I be lifted up, I draw all humankind toward me. Mm-hmm. What is the one greatest thing an individual can do for his society, for the whole of the species? The one greatest thing he can do is to make this maneuver, this step, himself or herself. Beyond that, you can never go. From here to eternity, you can never go beyond that, doing it simply within yourself. And everything in your culture drives you to project it out of yourself. Mm-hmm. Fall on your knees and pray to Cloud Nine to deliver you. Mm-hmm. It's never worked yet. Every once in a while, on some fluke chance, something might happen that way. On the other hand, this other thing of internally, what was called picking up the cross, or accepting your death in this moment. You're not trying to deny, you're not trying to get away. You're doing what? You're turning to the heart and you're saying, okay. Now, the only way you can do it, the only way you can turn to the heart and open to it, is by sending it a message of what? The higher prefrontals of love, acceptance, joy, etc. The opposite of the effect that you're getting from outside. Now, here's the only way you'll ever deal with the terrorist situation, which is going to destroy us. No matter how many bombs, you can't build enough bombs to overcome what the terrorists stand for on this earth, the terrible injustices that are going on that is involved in this. But this turning within, accepting your vulnerability, accepting your fragility, accepting your helplessness, and so on and so forth, but in the faith and trust that the heart has an intelligence which will move for well-being of the situation, not me over and above or at the cost of someone else, not me over and above the individual facing me with a gun or the mad dog, but me and that situation. And that's what's involved in this new evolutionary move that's been trying to break into human history for thousands of years. It hasn't been able to do it. Why? Because of the power of that ancient reptilian brain and its defense mechanism, which is maintained through culture.
Well, Joe, simply beautifully stated, and again, it's been such a pleasure spending this time with you. We've come to the end of this particular dialogue, and I want to just honor you for your life work in your previous books, Crack in the Cosmic Egg, The Magical Child, Evolution's End, and direct people to your new book, The Biology of Transcendence, which capitulates this particular dialogue and takes it further. So, Joseph Chilton Pierce, it's been a great delight and pleasure to spend this time together.
Well, I thank you, Duncan, very much. I'm afraid you punched my button and I got off on my high horse.
Well,
but I get kind of passionate about these items.
And I think that's what we all can allow ourselves to do if we give in to this higher heart-mind power and to allow the evolutionary transcendence to manifest within us. So you've been a beautiful example of that, Joe. And once again, thanks so much for being here on Living Dialogues.
Well, I sure thank you for having me.
I'm your host, Duncan Campbell, inviting you to be with us again next time. And once you have entered your free subscription to the Living Dialogues podcast here on Personal Life Media, future Living Dialogues will automatically be downloaded to your computer on a weekly basis. If you'd like to obtain a CD, MP3, or full transcript of this dialogue or additional dialogues I've done with the many other transformational thinkers listed on my website, livingdialogues.com, you can contact me through that website, livingdialogues.com. That's livingdialogues.com. Thanks again for your deep listening. All the very best.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.